From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. When Jason Da Silva was 25, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which restricts a person's movement. It affects their speech and their vision. Difficult for anyone, but particularly so if you're a filmmaker or the kind of filmmaker Jason was. A bit of a control freak, meticulous about shooting and composing. So when he decided to make a film about his own experience of becoming disabled, he had to let go of certain things. Had to let others do the shooting, like family members. Had to compromise on the cinematography he was used to. But in the process, he says, he discovered a new love for expressing the raw emotion of a story. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary film. Jason Da Silva is joining us to talk about When I Walk. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Jason Da Silva learned he had multiple sclerosis when he was 25. Jason is a filmmaker, and somewhere along the line, he decided to make a film about what he's called the transformative experience of being disabled. Of course, it meant he would have to film himself, something he wasn't really accustomed to, and film the really difficult stuff, the deeply intimate moments a person goes through as their body breaks down. Jason has said it was particularly difficult reviewing all of this footage, the process of reflecting on his own life creatively, having to put these moments together and then edit them. Jason says it put him into this odd psychological feedback loop that was difficult to negotiate. And most everything in his life is difficult to negotiate these days, which is part of what this film is about. It's called When I Walk. And today in the program, we're talking about the film. We're going to be screening it next week. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. It's part of our series on documentary film, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. And you can join the conversation if you like, if you have comments or questions. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Jason Da Silva has directed four short films, two feature documentaries. His work has been seen on PBS, on HBO, on the CBC. When I Walk premiered at the 2013 Sundance Film Festival. He won the Audience Award at the Vancouver International Film Festival. I mentioned we're screening the film next week. It's part of our Through the Lens series, and we'll give you the details about that a little bit later on the program. Jason Da Silva is joining us today from NPR in New York City. And Jason, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is great. Very excited.
I want to start with a moment, like one of the most captivating moments early on in the film. And this is in 2006. You're on a family vacation. You're at the beach with your family, and you fall down, and you can't really get up. And we're seeing this because I'm not sure if it's your brother, Lee, who's filming it. Someone's filming it. But will you talk about that first moment? Because that seemed to be an important part of this process. You knew you had MS at this point, I guess, but not being able to get up, what did that mean for you?
Yeah, that's right. So just to break it down, so I was diagnosed with MS probably the year previous to that, but nothing had happened like that, where I've fallen and then I could no longer get up. And it just so happened. So I was there. It was in St. Martin's. We were filming planes flying overhead the beach.
Yeah.
And my brother had the camera, but instead of pointing it towards the planes, he pointed it towards me. And what was on film is probably about a 3 to 5 minute struggle of me just trying to stand up and people having to come over and help me.
You've said that for the first time you realized this, that I guess this meant you couldn't really ignore this anymore. Is that about it?
That's right. that was a moment where I really had to confront what I was going through.
Yeah.
Not just through the camera, but even just going to medical appointments, things like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about your decision to decide to make a film about this, to turn the camera on yourself. How did that work? At what point did you figure maybe I can make a documentary? I know it probably went through a different, you probably had different ideas about it, but what was the first time you thought maybe I need to film this?
You know, that's a good question. I have a funny answer. So the real reason that I started the film was because I was going to so many medical appointments that I wasn't able to focus on a new documentary. So I said, really, if I'm dealing with all this stuff, I'm just going to bring the camera along and film the whole process. So that was how I first started. And it wasn't until maybe a week or two where I started getting support and people started really encouraging me that I took it seriously.
Mm. So as a filmmaker, you know, you have to, a documentary filmmaker, and you've done this. So you know you have to build a kind of trust with your subject. So what happens if the subject, you know, is you? What's the process? Do you have to establish a kind of trust with yourself in a similar kind of way?
Yeah, you know, yes, you do, but you don't do at the same time. So I first started when working on the film, I really started looking at the form of this style of making films. It's a style that's popular with filmmakers in the 90s, like Morgan Spurlock, Michael Moore as well.
Yeah.
It's called participatory documentary. And really, the interesting thing about it is that it's a subjective documentary form that's really up to you, because if you are the subject of your own film, you can call the shots as to what is reality. There's a lot of really great books that I read at the time before I started the film. I became fascinated with the form.
Yeah. But was there any part of you that kind of hated the form? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't like that form. That's not the film I would make, so I don't really want to do a film that I don't know. How did you feel about the form?
Yeah, no, that's good. So, yes, I totally agree with that. At first, it was very interesting. It was fun. You know, it's like nice to I'm an actor in my own movie. Cool.
Right.
But then after about 3 months to 6 months, it began to wear on me. And then I realized what I had done to myself and what I got myself into. And it didn't stop for years and years and years.
Did you figure that on some levels you were going to have to kind of compromise your vision as a filmmaker by doing a participatory documentary film? This isn't exactly what I would do, but this is happening to me, so I'm going to try this. I mean, did you think about what kind of compromise you would have to make on your sense of what art is like, your own art form?
Yep. Yeah, totally. So I was diagnosed in 2005. Yeah. I didn't start the film until late 2006. So what I was doing in between that time was working on 3 other films. So I was racing making films and really avoiding having to put myself on camera or confronting what I was going through. So it was only when I did that I realized that this was going to be very serious.
One thing that's interesting, I've heard you talk about the fact that this, on some level, is like a piece of performance art. In fact, you've talked about how you were inspired, at least in part, by these performance artists who use their own bodies and their own pieces. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, so it comes from my background. So I wasn't a documentary filmmaker out of school. So I studied to be a performance artist. I studied to be an installation artist. Mm. So these are very different than somehow I got into documentary. So I know how that happened. It's my grad film that I did in college got into Sundance. So all of a sudden I was a documentary filmmaker.
Right.
You know? But for this film in particular, I drew upon my history as a performance artist and my background in studies of performance art. So I was inspired by artists, video artists, and performance artists as Vito Acconci is one name, Marina Abramovic is another. So there's a list. You know, there's a rich history of performance artists that I drew upon when I first started the film.
You've talked about how, in some way, there was this kind of internal struggle that you went through about how much should I reveal of myself. And you reveal a lot, ultimately, in the film. So what did you decide? Did you figure, I mean, because there's a lot of really vulnerable moments here, which we'll talk about some of the particulars, but did you figure you just kind of had to, on some level, sort of expose yourself, be completely vulnerable if it's going to work in the way you thought it might?
Yeah, but it was a process, so yeah. It wasn't all right away. Actually, I did a short film before When I Walk in a short version, and I probably finished that in year two. And it really didn't confront much of anything when it came to vulnerability or my emotions and how I was feeling. So it was a process. So it wasn't until probably year three or year four where I really got into doing, really putting myself out there.
There's a moment early in the film where you're talking with a therapist or someone about wheelchairs. And you're looking through these wheelchair catalogs. And this is really early on in the film, but it just seems, I don't know, it seems scary. I mean, what was that moment like when you're like, am I going to be in a wheelchair?
You know, I didn't, yeah, you saw the look on my face at the end of the scene.
Yeah.
I didn't, that was actually genuine. So here I was this, how old was I at the time? I was 26 years old.
Yeah,
and I was standing, walking fine. I was this handsome guy, you know, doing my thing. I was a filmmaker. I was having fun. The last thing I would ever imagine was that I would be in a wheelchair. So when that OT that came up to me, who started showing me different wheelchairs and what I preferred, I just kind of like looked at the camera and said, this is what I have to deal with my life. This is not the way that it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I kept on through the film. I kept on going, trying to find ways to fight it.
I wanted to ask you about your mom, because she's great in the film, and she plays that. She's really funny, and you've talked about how that kind of surprised you, how funny your mother was. But talk about the role that she plays in the film, because on one hand, it's not exactly comic relief, although she is funny, but she's so grounding. She really grounds this, I think, the film and the themes in the film, and she seems to ground you as you begin to go through this process.
Yeah, you know, she is, she's an interesting character, for sure.
Yeah.
And she is the comic relief character of the film. But at the same time, she's not. She's the voice of reason, where things are wild for me and crazy. But, you know, people in other places have it twice as bad as you do. You know, you're living in New York. You may have multiple sclerosis, but you're, as she says, you're not in Jakarta in like a homeless slum.
So things
like that. She always kept me in perspective, and she still does that. That's the way she is. She's your typical South Asian mother.
Yeah. Let me play that clip because it's really great. I mean, as you say in the film, when all else fails, there's my mom, who's not going to put up with any whining or sighing, as she says here in this clip from Jason De Silva's film, When I Walk.
I need to change the state of mind. Don't you think?
What state of mind are you in now?
I don't know. Like, I'm always just thinking about being sick, right?
I thought you were thinking about making a documentary.
But in it, I'm constantly, like, talking about being sick. So there's not...
Well, you constantly talk about being sick all the time anyway. You know? It's constant. You're always whining and sighing. When you feel down, think of other countries, other people. A friend of mine, a teacher, just went to Jakarta. On a camera, I saw pictures of the central part of Jakarta with very, very poor people, shacks in the central part, surrounded by affluence, is this river passing through them with floating garbage. When you think your life is bad, think of situations like this where people are stuck.
Yeah.
Stuck. And I can go on and on. You only have one life, and I know I miss practicality, but we don't know how long we have to live. We could be dead tomorrow. Quit your film right now. How does it feel? Just quit. Yeah, seriously. Do you feel like a sense of relief?
I'm just saying that it's really tough to make the film. I'm not gonna quit the film, but it's really tough making the film.
Things are tough in life. Get real.
It's true.
You mollycoddled North American kid. You are so fortunate. So
She's great.
That's her.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I can't tell if there. I mean, your mother is. I'm sure that provides you comfort for sure. But there must have been moments when you just kind of wanted a hug. You know what I mean? And like, all right, let me just sort of feel sorry for myself for just a couple of hours or something.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that I really had, for that hug, I didn't have anybody to turn to. When your own mother is like that, you would expect, when you're with your own mother, you would expect that you get that reassuring hug. But no, I didn't get it from her. And yeah, I didn't get it from anybody. It wasn't until to later in the film, year 4 or 5, where I finally met somebody who gave me the tough love, but at the same time gave me the reassuring hug.
Yeah. Alice, whom we'll get to when we get back from a break. Jason DeSilva is with us, director and producer of the documentary When I Walk. Next Wednesday, that's November 5th. It's going to be at 7 o'clock at the Rose Wagoner Performing Arts Center. We're partnering again with the Utah Film Center to present a free screening of the film. It's part of our Through the Lens documentary series. Jason is going to be on hand with us in person for a Q&A following the film, so we hope you'll be with us. Before the film begins, he's going to receive the Peak Award for Disability in Film from the Utah Film Center. The award celebrates the legacy of Kim Peek, who was fictionalized in the film Rain Man. Some more information about all of this and the evening's event on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking with filmmaker Jason DeSilva. It's our latest in the series Through the Lens. Next week, we're going to be screening his film. It's called When I Walk. It's his own story. He films his experience with multiple sclerosis as he deals with the loss of muscle control and vision. He wanted to make sense of all of it through the art form that he really understood, film. So he set out to capture what it's like to become disabled, and the film we're going to be screening next week at the Rose Wagoner Performing Arts Center. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. Jason's joining us from NPR in New York City this morning. It seems like of all the themes that are in this film, one of them, a big one anyway, is the mystery of fate. And it's something that seemed to come to you, at least in part, when you went to India. You decided to travel to India, go with your brother, to visit family, really. Could we talk a little bit about that? It's interesting. You said you'd been there before. This was before, of course, you discovered you had MS. And that when you went there before, you felt like you really belonged. But going back in the film, we see things have changed.
Yeah, definitely. So in that part of the film, one of the first scenes in that part of the film, you see myself, well, I was in a walker at the time, so I was walking with the walker in front of the gateway of India.
Yeah.
And all, you know, I would blend in just fine. I mean, like, here I am, second generation Indian, but I would be just fine. People wouldn't think I was a tourist. But being in a walker, I had groups and groups of leering men looking at me in my walker and wondering what this wild device was that I was carrying around. I mean, that's the way the whole trip was. So it was, you know, it was me going around and having people basically just look at me, stare at me, and there's the challenges of accessibility in India are huge.
Yeah.
So we got into a lot of events and challenges.
When you're there, you begin to wonder if you could find something there in India that would help make you better. So you try transmeditation and you try yoga and Ayurvedic medicine. You try that. You say that it didn't really work, of course, but it did make you feel a bit more at peace. When does the idea of fate start coming to you? Was it while you were in India that this is kind of a little bit about the mystery of fate?
Yeah, it was actually, where that was in the film and in my own life. It's where I talked with my granduncle, mm-hmm. Dijose, and I talked with him, and really we talked about family, we talked about like my health and his advice towards me. But the interesting thing, which I didn't actually put into the film, but he passed away only 3 months after that interview. So that was I think I was the last family from abroad that actually got to see him and talk to him. So in that way, I continued and talked about the mystery of fate. So what are the chances of being able to, for me to be able to talk to him? But what are the chances of multiple sclerosis happening to me?
Yeah.
And also like the faith of all my family and whether or not that could be something that could get me out of what I was dealing with.
Here's another moment from the film.
Being with Dijose reminds me of my family history. The story of my ancestors. Their hopes and dreams. The mystery of fate. It makes me wonder, what will my future be?
March of 2009, I think it's March. Is that when you met Alice?
I don't remember what month it was, but yeah, it was 2009.
Tell us about Alice, how you met her. She became the person. She became the person who would give you the hug.
That's right. So I met Alice at an MS support group. And it's not because Alice has MS herself, but she was at the support group learning about MS and wanted to talk to people about her mom's MS. So she was there learning all about MS and what are the challenges and what we go through and how to support somebody. But I took it as an opportunity to take her on a date. So we met at an MS support group, and from there we just started dating, actually.
Yeah. How do you describe your connection? What was the connection at first? Was it, it was certainly had something to do with MS in the sense that you were there at the support group, but early on, did your connection with Alice have anything to do at all with your disability, do you think?
I don't think so,
yeah.
And I'm curious, and I don't think that she would say so. So we did a lot of things. I mean, it became that we began to be partners in crime and fight for people with disabilities and their rights. But at first it really was, we just get along and we really, like mano a mano, and we like both think alike. So it was those things that allowed us to come together.
I have to say, I think that's the way I saw it in the film. It was like that. It had nothing to do with in many ways with the MS part, and I think one of the most powerful parts of the film because Alice really struggles with all of this. And you can see the process of her having to come to terms with the reality of it. Let me play another moment. This is early on in the film, in your relationship anyway, and you're at a restaurant having lunch, and you're asking her, as people will hear in this film, you know, what happens when I can't eat anymore? And will you be that person who feeds me? And I think her answer is really, really interesting. Here's another clip from the film, When I Walk.
Alice, yeah, what happens when I can't eat my food? I'm already having trouble with my hands.
I don't know. It's like an overwhelming question to me right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to figure that out. Like, people obviously still live without being able to lift a hand.
Will you be the person that feeds me? Will we, like, come to a restaurant and then you feed me the food and then eat your own food too? In front of everybody else to watch?
I don't know.
Like, you expect some kind of noble, profound sort of course I will, but the fact that she says, I don't know, and you get that sense kind of throughout the film, is one of the best parts about it for me. There's not a lot of sentimentality there. She really is confronting all of this. Would you talk about that? Because Alice is really unsure early on.
Yeah, she is unsure early on. So it wasn't until she really got the go-ahead from her dad, who was, you know, her dad, like, lived with her mom that had MS for so many years. And he basically gave her the go-ahead and said, you know, if you're in love with somebody, it's not MS. MS won't matter. You know, you'll just go on and live your life and live their life and be in support of them. So it was that. So as the scenes go forward in the film, you never really see a side of her that has the overbearing sentimentality or anything like that.
At all. Here's another.
This is good.
Absolutely. And I think that here's another moment here where she's asking herself these questions. She's filming herself. And I want to ask, let me play this, and I want to ask you about the role that she played and how you talked about the role she was going to play. Again, another clip from When I Walk.
I was overwhelmed with the fact he had MS. There were all these questions in my head, like, is it too challenging? Is it, like, the social pressures from how would people perceive you? All that stuff. So I sent an email to my dad, and I said, can you date someone with MS? And my dad said, yes, I'm dating someone with MS right now. You know, he's married to my mom.
I wonder, did you know early on that you wanted Alice to be a part of the process, that you wanted her to reveal herself in that way? I mean, what was her role early on, and how did that evolve?
You mean in the film or just in general?
Well, her part in the film. I mean, you know, she's beside you and you have this relationship, but then you decide to involve her in the film. I mean, she becomes crucial as just a co-filmmaker on some level, of course, as well. But how did you guys talk about that?
We didn't actually. So by entering Jason's life, it was one of these things where my camera, it's been rolling for the past 4 years previous because I'm just shooting for When I Walk. But when we met, and even we covered, like, our first dates, the camera came along with us. So I don't think she had much of a choice in that matter. It wasn't until later, when we were putting together the film and everything, that really she became an integral part to the process of making the film.
Was she at all reluctant early on of being, you know, going on camera and talking about how she felt about all of this?
No, she wasn't, actually. Huh. It was more my camera people that were reluctant because they didn't know if she'd stick around or whatever. So
because she's just a girlfriend, right? At that
point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, like nobody would like be with Jason or whatever. But she stuck around. So the film goes forward and shows so many more things that happened to us over the next few years.
That's a really powerful moment in the film. And I mean, you know, among the questions that she's getting at, she says, you know, what happens if in 15 years, if you can't walk, you know, not only walk, but if you can't talk, I mean, what happens to the relationship? How do you define a relationship where the communication is so limited? Surely you must, obviously you're still thinking about all of that. What, have you come to any sense of how the relationship will change as your body deteriorates?
You know, that's a good question. So our relationship is changing. So in the way that now I have care aides that go around and help me do everything. So we are married, but it's a very complicated marriage where we have multiple people in our lives. Plus, we have a kid now. So, and my symptoms are getting way worse. And I'm getting discouraged. And so, yeah, so it's not all the romance. And I mean, the film is a capsule of a beautiful time and the magic and romance that came with it. But life still continues. And that's what I want to talk about in future work. So in the future films that I want to talk about. Because that's the side that's the deep and dark side that people don't always hear about.
It's pretty clear the film is, at least to me, I don't know, but it's pretty clear the film is about New York City in some way too. And your relationship with that city. And your affection for it, and your frustration with it too. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the whole film takes place in New York City. Talk about the challenges of getting around the city. Definitely.
How long did it take for you to get to the studio this morning?
Good question. 1.5 hours. So from 2nd Avenue and 11th. To the studio here, which is on 42nd, so really not that far. Maybe a 20-minute drive took 1.5 hours. Now you ask, why did it take 1.5 hours?
Yeah.
Well, it's impossible to get a wheelchair cab in New York. I can't ride the subway, first off, and you can't hail a wheelchair cab, so you have to wait and call one. That ends up taking 1.5 hours.
There's this really powerful scene in the film. I don't want to give too much away about it, but where Alice has to go to the hospital and you just can't go with her. And that must have been incredibly, frustrating probably isn't even the word, but you can't go along. You just have to stay in the apartment because there's no way you're going to be able to, wouldn't make any sense really. You just can't get there.
Yeah, that's right. So it was like a really, really sick moment for me where like I couldn't even go with my own wife and support her at the hospital just because there was no way for me to get there.
You know, I want to talk about that because there are a number of scenes where we see what it's like to get around in the city and the commotion. You know, it's hard to get a cab, hard to get to different places. And really, you come up with this idea, and it becomes a bit of an element in the film where you create this so-called, I'm not sure if it's an app or a tool for sharing information about wheelchair-accessible businesses and restaurants. And this is an important part, I think, of your life anyway, and certainly of the film. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, so it's called Access Map. So the website is axsmap.com. So we actually, I mean, it was like my idea going all the way back to like 2008. Mm. But in the film, we build it and make it a reality. So it's up there. It's live. So what it is a way to review and rate places on wheelchair accessibility, but accessibility in general for people with all physical mobility challenges. So it's there. And yeah, it's getting a lot of traction. We have about 7,000 reviews and 4,000 users. And hopefully many more to come.
Yeah. One of the things you've talked about is that people who, when you can't maneuver around a place, a city, people with disabilities get, you say, sort of sent off into the periphery of their communities. It's something you describe as being akin to kind of a civil death. And so this is why you feel so strongly about this. I mean, you were plugged into the city. You were all over the place in that city. You loved it. You loved being a part of it. But now you're in a wheelchair, and it's a different experience. And I guess that's really a powerful story you want to tell.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a story that affects me. I'm 30-something, but it affects people of all generations. So, yes, and I don't think that, I mean, one of the things that I have is the power to tell stories. So I want to tell that story because so many people are just out there and don't have their stories told. So to me, that's something that really needs to get out there.
Seems like this is one of the things you're hoping for the film. You've talked about you want to sort of empower people with disabilities to lobby for change, really.
Yeah, that's right. And eventually to tell their own stories with film as well.
Jason Da Silva is with us. He's director and producer of the documentary When I Walk. On Wednesday, next Wednesday, that's November 5th at 7 o'clock, the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Jason is going to join us as we partner with the Utah Film Center to present a free screening of the film. Before all of that begins, he's going to receive the Peak Award for Disability in Film from the Utah Film Center. You can see the details for all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. And I should mention, this week on Video West, we're showing a short film by Jason in our favorites section. It's called The Long Wait. It's about Jason's challenges trying to navigate New York City's transit system. We'll have that later today on videowest.kuer.org. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with the filmmaker Jason Da Silva. We're talking about his film, When I Walk. It is the latest in our partnership with the Utah Film Center, the Through the Lens series, and we are going to be screening the film next Wednesday night. That's November 5th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. We'll give you more details about that as we go along. You mentioned in the film, really it was drawing that was your first love, at least in terms of art. And you mentioned how when you were a kid that your art always kept you going, how drawing was so important. But now you don't really have the ability to have that tactile sensation of drawing anymore. So is filmmaking enough? Is it satisfying enough of your need really for art?
No, that's a good question. The answer is no. So film, it's a long format, so it takes a while to make a film. But what I can do is I make these short video segments and put them on the web, and that usually takes a day or two to complete.
Yeah.
But that's the closest I can come to really just drawing. I used to be able to draw a comic or something in a page a day. That would be my rule. So there was a big loss to me.
Yeah. There's this scene where you're having your mom help you compose this shot. And she it's kind of funny because she clearly isn't getting it. And I wonder how hard was that to turn over that part of the process to other people? I mean, Alice at times, your brother at times, your mom. This was the part you really loved, I guess, the composing part. And so you have to turn that over. That must have been hard.
Yeah, it is. It continues. So it's still hard because everything I do, somebody else has to do it. So I have to have somebody to shoot. I have to have somebody else to edit. Just literally my vision's going bad. Mm-hmm. So people have to like read emails to me, things like that. So in that way, I'm losing a lot of control. But yeah, I'm trying to find new ways to keep some sort of integrity and definition to my creative self with these new ways of doing things.
Like what?
So like, for example, I'm working on a new film. So the follow-up to When I Walk. Mm-hmm. But I can't edit anymore. Like even in the film at the end of When I Walk, I can do some things. Alice was helping me. But now I can't do anything at all. So I'm like teaching people how to edit. And then after that, then having them edit according to what I tell them to do.
And it's just, it's got to be enough, right? Because that is your limitation. You just have to kind of take it as this is the way it is.
Exactly. And it's like that for all, it's not just, I mean, my editing is just a metaphor for life in general.
Yeah.
So it's not just editing. It's getting around town and my relationships with people and things. So everything, to me, right now, everything's very surreal and different than anything I've had before. Even then, during doing When I Walk, because this is, here we are like 2 years later and my MS didn't stop. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a moment in the film where you and Alice are talking about your sex life. And I wanted to play a clip from this moment because, you know, she said, you know, if I would have heard myself or a conversation like this a few years ago or something like that, I would have thought this was kind of really difficult or terrible. And it's an interesting moment because she, you ask her this really blunt question. Let me play this moment from the film and we can talk about it from When I Walk.
Do you ever wish that you're with somebody able-bodied?
Yeah. But I wish you were able-bodied. That's who I wish I was with. Because I think if you were able-bodied, we would have wonderful sex life. But I mean, overall, like, we still can, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And we want to have kids, and I think we'll hopefully get to do that.
What I like about the film, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, was that Alice generally is never too idealistic about all of this, and she's always honest with you. That's a really honest answer when you say, did you wish you had somebody who was able-bodied? And she says, yes, I do, absolutely. But, you know, but that's not you. She's really, I guess, she must help keep you grounded too, because she's pretty honest about all of this stuff.
Yeah, she's actually far more grounded than I am, which is pretty amazing. You know, I mean, to have somebody like Alice in your life is like really a blessing, because as the world goes crazy around me, in my world, you know, it's like I can't even see properly these days. So as like things are shifting and changing, there's a very honest and compassionate Alice that kind of puts things into perspective.
There's a moment when Alice talked to the camera toward the end of the film. She's filming herself at this moment, I think, anyway. And anyway, she's talking about how she wants this disease to stop. But of course it won't. And then there's this moment between you and your wife, Alice.
How do you think about your, like, 40s and your 50s? Are you scared ever?
Scared of my 40s and 50s? No, it just... I think that, like, I'm not gonna live past 50, which sucks, but I'm gonna, like, do everything I can before that. I think I'm just, like, kind of pissed off that, like, that this happened. And that the world's not really, like,
accommodating. It sucks because I'm well aware of, like, the whole world out there that I never got to grow into, you know? It's like I worked really hard till I was 25 and then that's it. And everything's been like trying to hold on to some things. I mean, I'm like grateful for a lot of like new things that have happened in my life, like you, but then there's like so much that I missed out on, that I'll miss out on for the rest of my life, you know?
We should point out that there's a moment in the film that, just briefly, that features Utah. Alice travels here to go hiking. It's something she loves to do, something she hadn't been able to do with you. And it's even that moment, I have to say, is kind of heart-wrenching on some level, because you can get a sense that Alice really resents this condition that you have, and it's limiting. And so she has to, or she wants to anyway, she wants to go and, she doesn't want to be away from you, but she needs to go and do things too. And that's a really powerful moment in the film too. It almost seems, she must feel guilty. I mean, that is one thing she talks about. Would you talk about that? I mean, she has a sense of guilt about those feelings.
Yeah. I mean, she is being a very honest caretaker. And there's lots of people that would say opposite of what she said. But she's going out there and living her life and doing things that she wanted to do. And, you know, like my comment in the film is like, yeah, you got to go. Like, do what you got to do. And I think that, you know, it was courageous of Alice to really put herself out there and do that. Because I think that a lot of the criticism that she gets on, like, these blogs or even during Q&As is, well, why did you just leave Jason there? Like, why didn't you find a way to take him with you? And no, I agree with her that people who are caretakers should have, you know, some downtime and really, like, help themselves, I think.
Were there moments during this process, Jason, that you didn't think you were going to be able to finish the film?
Yeah, there was. It was probably up to year 6 out of 7, so around the 6th year. I really didn't know, like, where the film was going. And I met Alice. I have all this really great footage. But it wasn't until both Alice and I started really writing the story and, like, what there was that we really knew where we were going. That was around January of 2012.
Wow. That's when it started to kind of come together of that this is what it is, this film, or?
Yeah. So once we realized, you know, it's like similar to, what is it similar to? It's like adaptation.
Mm.
It's a very like meta film.
Yeah.
So it's a film about making a film. When we realized that's the story is that, along with so many other things, but if that's the guiding line of the film, then everything else kind of gelled. You know, because really it's a film about making a film, like more than just multiple sclerosis or what I was dealing with. It's about continuing on and telling stories.
Yeah. You've talked about how you almost had this kind of split personality part of you, the part of you that really wanted to kind of, that was tired of it all. But then there was the director part of you, the filmmaker part of you that really wanted to get the film finished. That those were playing off each other, I guess.
Yeah, and it continues to. So, like, I still have troubles about being frustrated and not wanting to do any of this. But the other side of me still wants to be a director and be creative. So these two things are constantly at odds with each other. It doesn't stop with the film.
You know, it's interesting hearing your voice, and I compare it to the voice I heard in the film that I was watching. And I'm wondering what that's like for you to go back and see the footage of you walking or even using a walker or hearing your voice, because it has changed. I mean, what's that
like?
Yeah,
you noticed, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's very frustrating, I would say. So, things like my voice is getting raspier and quieter. My walking is really difficult. You know, my vision's tougher now. So it just doesn't change. I mean, it doesn't, it changes. And I think that's my biggest problem is confronting the new changes that I have.
Jason De Silva directed and produced the film When I Walk. Next Wednesday, November 5th, he's going to be with us at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center when we present a free screening of the documentary. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. Before the film, the center is going to honor him with the 2014 Peak Award for Disability in Film. And Jason will be around for a Q&A following the screening, and you can get all of that all of those details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Jason, we'll see you Wednesday. Thanks very much for the time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I should also mention this week on Video West, we're going to be showing a short film by Jason in our favorites section. It's called The Long Wait, about his challenges navigating the New York City transit system. Go to videowest.kuer.org to see that. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Thanks to Michael Shea. We had technical direction from Tim Slover and Michael Havey. The show is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Eileen Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.